Radiolab is supported by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, exercising, cleaning. What if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com, Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Radiolab is supported by Betterment. Let's talk about you and your money. You like to relax every now and then. Your money likes to work. And Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. While you're catching up on sleep, your money is up early, automatically reinvesting your dividends. Your money is a total workhorse, so you don't have to be, because you've got Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Wait, you're listening.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
You're listening to Radiolab.
Radiolab.
From
WNYC.
See?
See?
Yep.
Okay, let's see what happens.
Hey, I'm Jad Abumrad.
I'm Robert Krilwich.
So last week, this is Radiolab. So last week, our reporter, Simon Adler, took a look at some new technologies.
Software that's coming soon to a store near you.
Yep, people estimate it'll be here somewhere between 6 months and 2 years. And this is software that's going to allow you to manipulate audio and video in ways that are unprecedented. Things are going to get confusing.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing was a little worrying.
I would say so.
But we figured, rather than just sort of leave ourselves and our audience in terror.
We don't have to leave you in terror, because during the course of making this show, we have met people who are unambiguously, fanatically, heroically, ferociously defenders of truth. They would never, ever allow a false statement to be made in their presence.
Exactly. So for the next 2 weeks, we're going to present the Truth Warriors.
They're not all the healthiest people in the world.
No, but we at least felt like we needed to remind ourselves that the coming age of fakery will not be met lying down.
So, to start us off,
it's not impossible to hold a lotus position. It's just unlikely you're doing it for these other ways that are described.
I see.
Yes.
We're going to play this amazing little bit of a conversation you had with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
I was talking with him at the 92nd Street Y in front of a live audience, and in the middle of the conversation, out of nowhere, really, he began telling me about a little incident.
Oh yeah, so I had there was an incident in Pasadena, California. I was there. I don't drink much coffee. I don't have a relationship with caffeine. But every now and then, I'll be delighted to have a nice cup of hot cocoa. And I went to one of these coffee houses, you know, with the chalkboard out front. And so I had, you know the kind I'm talking about. They're all over Brooklyn. You trip on the chalkboards in Brooklyn. So I'm in there. I order hot chocolate. And I order it with whipped cream, of course, right? And it comes to the table, and there's no whipped cream. And I said, I ordered this with whipped cream. And they said, oh, we put it on. And I said, well, where is it? Oh, he said, it's sunk to the bottom. I then said, either the laws of physics that apply everywhere in the universe are suspended in your coffee shop, or you didn't put whipped cream on my hot cocoa. And he looked indignant.
Really?
Now, to his credit, rather than continue to argue with me, he intended to prove me wrong.
Whoa.
So he went into the kitchen, brought out the whipped cream, scooped it up, popped it in my hot cocoa, and it bobbed once and floated atop. And there it was.
Did you
of
invite?
Of course, whipped cream. Of course, whipped cream has to float. Because first of all, before it was whipped cream, it was cream. Okay. And old timers remember, what does cream do in unhomogenized milk? It floats to the top, and you skim off the cream, leaving behind skim milk. Okay. This is how that works. Now you take the heavy cream and then whip it, putting air into it. It is not going to sink on any known liquid devised by man. Okay? So.
All right.
So here's my point. The lesson there is.
Yes.
I'm a fan of the edict, if an argument lasts more than 5 minutes, then both sides are wrong. I think that applies maybe 85% of the time, but it's a good tenet to carry with you. Now watch. This is how science works. One researcher comes up with a result, and that is not the truth. No. No, a scientific emergent truth is not the result of any one experiment. What has to happen is somebody else has to verify it, preferably a competitor, preferably someone who doesn't want you to be correct, such as my waiter. He went out to prove me wrong and got the same result that I had declared. We can call that the beginnings of an emergent truth about whipped cream. Now we need someone to do it in Asia and in Europe, and then you get a trend, and you can then declare that a consensus of observation and experiments has emerged in the scientific community. Whipped cream floats on hot chocolate.
And that waiter today is getting a PhD in buoyancy.
That's Neil deGrasse Tyson at the 92nd Street Y. His new book is called Astrophysics for People in a Hurry.
Coming up after the break, another truth warrior. Although, for this guy, the word warrior might be inadequate.
He's like a zealot.
Yeah.
This is Ryan Percy calling from Stowe, Vermont. Radio Lab is supported in part by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, enhancing public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. More information about Sloan at www.sloan.org.
WNYC Studios is supported by Rocket Money. Did you know nearly 75% of people have subscriptions they've forgotten about? Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Rocket Money will even try to negotiate your bills for you by up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/WNYC. That's rocketmoney.com/WNYC.
Radiolab is supported by Babbel. Sometimes self-improvement can feel like a pretty overwhelming journey. So what if this year you just got a tiny bit better every day? When you're learning a new language with Babbel, that's exactly what you're doing. Babbel is a science-backed language learning app with quick 10-minute lessons that have been handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. You can learn everything you need to have real-world conversations, café s'il vous plaît, from vocabulary words to culture and more. And if Babbel can help you start speaking a new language in just 3 weeks, imagine what you could do in a few months or a full year. Here is a special limited-time deal for Radiolab listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/radiolab. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/radiolab, spelled B-A-B-B-E-L Visit Boost.com/Radiolab. Rules and restrictions may apply. Hey, Lulu here. You asked and we listened. You wanted a Zuzve shirt and we made one. It is a gorgeous celebration of the liminal being that is Venus's moon slash not moon. And you yourself can sport this homage to the unknowable multitudes of those all around you and within you by simply joining The Lab. The Lab is our membership program. That is the place where we fight the fight against the fickle whims of the economy to make our show protected from all that based on listener support. If you sign up, we thank you with the brand new Zuzve t-shirt and also ad-free episodes, bonus interviews, and other swaggy stuff like stickers and patches. You can go check out the perks and see if it's right for you by going to radiolab.org/join. And thank you, either way, for being here, for listening to our show. We make it for you, Zve. Anyway, radiolab.org/join. Check it out. And thanks.
Jad.
Robert.
Radiolab. All right, so we heard Neil
yeah.
talking physics about the hot chocolate.
That's easy, by the way. Physics at least speaks for itself.
You have a law. Mm-hmm. It's in textbooks.
Mm-hmm.
You can refer to it. We're about to. The degree of difficulty in our next story is frankly much higher. Hi, is this Errol Morris?
I think it's me.
Hello, this is Jad from Radiolab.
Hi, thank you for your very, very nice but somewhat disturbing email.
What disturbed you in the email?
The term truth fascist.
So yes, once upon a time, a couple years ago, I did, in an email, refer to Errol Morris as a truth fascist. That was meant lovingly, I should say.
Ah!
Wasn't exactly the right choice of words. Fundamentalist?
Oh, I like it!
But really what I meant is, like, this is a guy who's always trying to get to the bottom of things. He's made all these documentaries, Thin Blue Line.
Oh, yeah.
Got a guy off death row, actually, in A Thin Blue Line. He made The Fog of War.
He made Vernon, Florida.
Yeah, but I contacted him because, you know, I'd recently seen him give this talk about this one investigation of his that for me is like the purest example of the thing that drives him, the thing that's in all of his films, this desire, relentless desire to figure things out, to get to
truth.
And it all starts with a photograph.
One of the very, very first photographs of war, 1855.
Which war?
This is the Crimean War. It involved Great Britain, France, Russia, the Ottoman Empire, and believe it or not, Sardinia.
The fighting took place in what is now basically the Ukraine. The Russians were on one side, everybody else on the other. 500,000 people died. It was incredibly brutal.
And there's this photograph titled The Valley of the Shadow of Death. It's black and white. It shows a dirt road cutting through this landscape.
Just one dirt road between two hills.
There's nobody in the photograph.
No birds, no trees, no people.
There's really nothing living in the photograph.
Not even grass.
Nothing.
But as you stare at this road a little more closely, you realize why nothing is living in this photograph. Because this road is
littered with cannonballs. Cannonballs everywhere.
As soon as you notice them, the photograph springs to life.
You imagine this fusillade of artillery fire raining down on this landscape. This is one really fascinating thing about photography. It's a time machine. There's a physical connection between that photograph and that world.
Because you're holding this piece of film that was literally ripped right out of that world.
But the context is gone.
And more importantly, in this case, you don't even know if that picture is true.
What do you mean?
It turns out that this photograph is one of a pair. There is a second photograph exactly the same as the first photograph.
Exact same camera position.
But in this other photograph, the cannonballs that were on the road are gone.
So one has cannonballs on the road and one has cannonballs not on the road, but otherwise they're completely identical.
Yes.
You thought, that's weird. Let me look into that.
And there was a passage in...
And he ends up reading this essay by Susan Sontag.
Where she talks about these photographs as though it's just obvious what was going on.
And he was like, oh, that word.
Well, I don't like the word obvious.
Susan Sontag was basically arguing that the guy who took the picture, Roger Fenton, came to an empty road, put the cannonballs on the road. He staged it.
Yes.
It's obvious.
But...
That word.
Nothing's so obvious that it's obvious. And so I started investigating. I tracked down Fenton's letters from the Crimea, journals, written records of soldiers who were in that area at that given time.
Didn't find much.
I interviewed five historians. Two ordered the photographs in one way.
Saying, yes, it's obvious he posed the pictures.
Two...
This is a bit of a surprise.
Ordered the photographs in the opposite way.
Really?
They told him it is actually very possible that Fenton saw the cannonballs, took the picture, and then soldiers came along, took the cannonballs off the road to recycle them so they could fire them back at the Russians.
Exactly.
Was that kind of recycling common practice?
Yes, indeed it was, actually.
So you had a tie. Two historians saying he faked it, two saying he didn't.
And the fifth...
Tiebreaker.
Jump back and forth.
I like that you tried to call him the tiebreaker, and he didn't break the tie.
Well, of course, none of these things is subject to vote. Truth isn't something that you vote on.
At this point, he says he was feeling a very familiar...
irritation.
He thought, you know what? Forget historical interpretations.
What if I could, from the photograph itself, the very photograph itself, determine which photograph came first?
From just the photos.
So... I started A-B-ing the photographs.
Just sort of superimposing them on each other and flipping back and forth.
A, B, B, A, A, B, B, A, et cetera, et cetera.
Nothing. And then he thinks...
I know what I can do. I can start studying the shadows.
Which meant...
Yeah, let's go to the Crimea.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
His reasoning was, I can't study the shadows unless I know the exact direction the camera was pointing on that day in 1855, which means I need to find the exact spot where Fenton stood.
And I had terrible trouble finding this place.
Is it marked?
No! All of the guides kept taking me to the Charge of the Light Brigade, that site where Tennyson wrote about the Valley of Death. No, 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 not the Valley of Death. No. The Valley of the Shadow of Death. But finally...
A guide named Olga...
She was fabulous.
...helps him locate the spot.
It's completely desolate, undeveloped.
Still, after 150 years. With some trial and error, he's able to figure out that Fenton was facing north when he took those photos, and then he goes off to the Crimean War Museum and asks them...
Could I borrow some cannonballs?
Oh, man.
I take the cannonball, take it out to the Valley of the Shadow of Death, and I photograph it.
At different times of the day, hoping that he'd be able to see subtle differences in the shadows cast by those cannonballs that could help him order the photos.
But nothing.
Nothing?
There was endless questions about cloud cover, whether you could even measure the shadows on these photographs.
In fact, he now suspects that the shadows in those old pictures... may not have been shadows at all.
But just artifacts of how the prints were made. And on and on.
So was the trip useful at all?
Not so much.
Oh, man.
How many days did you spend photographing and examining the photographs of cannonballs on the road?
I was there for about a week.
And then he went home with no answer to his question, only that continuing...
irritation.
But he was like, no.
No.
Not done yet.
Look, when you investigate anything, I don't care what it is, whether it's a Fenton photograph or Abu Ghraib or the murder of a Dallas police officer, yes, complications result. Thinking causes complications. I'm sorry. But it's part of that process that we go through of trying to figure out what's out there in the world. What really happened. This is about truth. Absolute truth. And the pursuit of truth properly considered shouldn't stop short of insanity. So yes, the Fenton photographs worried me that I might not be able to resolve it to my satisfaction.
But then he's at a party, and he bumps into a friend of his, a guy by the name of Dennis Purcell.
Who is very, very good with Photoshop.
We called him up.
Hello.
Turns out.
Well, I'm an optical engineer.
So he's not just good at Photoshop, he actually builds high-tech cameras. In any case, they were talking at this party.
And the Fenton picture came up.
Errol told him.
He had this problem of wondering which came first and said, could you take a look at these?
Dennis takes the pictures home, puts them in his computer.
Then I immediately started to compare them.
Right away, he starts noticing differences between the two.
The light changed. The weather was different. Shadows.
But he comes to pretty much the same conclusion as Errol, that those things ultimately don't help. So he just starts flipping between the photos.
Flipping them back and forth.
Back and forth between the two photographs.
On the road.
Flip.
Off the road.
Flip.
On the road.
Flip.
Off the road.
Flip.
He's doing this for hours. Off the road.
Flip.
On the road. Flip. And then he sees it.
The rocks on the left-hand side.
This little group of pebbles up on the left bank. Every time he flipped back and forth.
Flip, flip.
Those little rocks.
Popped out.
They moved. Just a little bit. And when he zoomed in, he could see that there were five of them.
Fred, George, Oswald, Lionel, and Marmaduke.
We named them, yes.
These five guys shifted from one photo to the next. And here's the key. In the picture where the road was empty, they were a little bit higher on the hill. When the road was full of cannonballs, those little rocks shift down.
Maybe 8 inches or 9 inches.
And from the direction of that movement, you could order the photographs.
It's basically like this. You could say some rocks fell down the hill. They went from up on the hill to down. Up goes before down. And if the up photo is the empty road and the down photo is the road full of cannonballs, well then...
The one with the cannonballs on the road was the second picture.
Imagine the scene.
Fenton comes upon an empty road, but he sees cannonballs on the hill. So he and...
Whoever was helping him would have walked along the sides of the road and lifted up cannonballs, moved them onto the road. In that process, they would have invariably knocked into rocks.
And rocks don't fall uphill.
They only fall downhill.
It's gravity.
So case closed? This has been resolved?
Yeah. I think it has.
So Susan Sontag was right.
For the wrong reasons.
But she was right. Fenton staged a photograph. So in addition to being one of the first photographs of war, this is one of the first photographic lies.
I guess he just figured it was a better photo.
Yeah. Or you could say...
Fenton was a coward.
Maybe he didn't want to get too close to the actual fighting, so he
put the cannonballs on the road to make it look a lot more dangerous than it would have otherwise.
Or maybe he was after some kind of
emotional truth.
That's what Dennis Purcell thinks.
It's obvious why he did it.
There's that word again.
To make it look the way it felt. To put those cannonballs on the road is how you felt when you were there.
In which case, he would argue that the second photo, the one he posed, is more authentic than the first.
But forget all of that. Who in hell knows what Fenton was thinking? I really don't know what his motivation was.
But isn't that kind of the question at the end of the day?
Do I really care whether he put the cannonballs on the road or not?
Well, I
after
I
all,
hope so.
I hope you do.
I hope you do.
Don't you?
I do and I don't.
Really?
Why would you go through all this then?
I guess this is what I take from it. In flipping back and forth between those two photographs.
Flip.
He says you see the rocks move.
Flip.
And when you see the rocks move.
Flip.
You imagine feet kicking those rocks.
Flip.
And when you imagine feet.
Flip.
Kicking those rocks.
Flip.
You feel.
Flip.
The soldiers walking.
Like, really feel it.
You feel them hitting into the rocks. You feel, on some deep sense for me, the reality of that scene in a way that I would not have felt otherwise. It's almost as if
you've walked through a pinhole camera into the past. That world in which the photograph, that strange temporal evanescent world in which we live, is gone.
But if you can step between these photographs, you are permitted a brief trespass into something that you thought was lost.
Yes. My father died when I was 2 years old. And perhaps the deepest, one of the deepest mysteries of my life, who was he? Here are all these photographs around the house. I was very, very young. I have no memories of him. There's a mystery about this man who is central to my life in so many ways, but who I don't know. And who I never will know.
Thank you to Errol Morris. You can read a version of this story and also see the pictures that he was talking about in his book, Believing is Seeing. And thanks to Ira Glass for putting us in touch with him.
And, of course, thanks also to Neil deGrasse Tyson. Next week, we'll continue with our Truth Warriors sort of bounce. And where we will land next week is very contemporary.
Very internet-y, very trolly.
And maybe as weird, if not weirder, than the ones we've just told you.
I'm Jad Abumrad.
I'm Robert Krulwich.
Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Lisa calling from Lyckoshamn, Sweden. Radiolab was created by Jad Abumrad and is produced by Soren Wheeler. Dylan Keefe is our director of sound design. Our staff includes Simon Adler, David Gebel, Tracy Hunt, Matt Keelty, Robert Krulwich, Annie McEwen, Latif Nasser, Melissa O'Donnell, Ariane Wack, and Molly Webster. With help from Suhum Pravar, Rebecca Shawson, Nigar Fatali, Phoebe Wang, and Katie Ferguson. Our fact checker is Michelle Harris.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.